Academy.
Hey, this is Nomad, host and creator of the Career Musician Podcast. Why do they call me Nomad? Well, I traveled the globe, spreading the joy of music one song at a time. And now I bring you wisdom, tried and true knowledge, and life experiences of my colleagues and peers in this crazy business we call music. Welcome to another episode of the Career Musician Podcast. Today we have guitarist L.A. Williams, kidney transplant survivor, and miracle man.
This is the Career Musician Podcast with your host, Nomad.
Okay, first of all, big shout out to Kevin Wilson and all of my homies at the International Musician Summit. Kevin founded the summit, and that's where I met L.A. Williams. Now, L.A. Williams is near and dear to my heart because of one thing. He's a kidney transplant and dialysis survivor. Now, this is near and dear to me because my father is going through the very same experience. When I called L.A. to pick his brain about it, he was nothing but loving, caring, helpful, insightful, and he continues to be supportive in this manner. So I would like to say, if there's anybody out there struggling with being on dialysis or needing a kidney transplant, please reach out to L.A. Williams on Facebook, and I can guarantee you he's going to bless you. That's not the only reason why I think he's super cool. He is buds with Isaiah Sharkey, one of today's greatest guitar players, hands down. And yes, they are both disciples of the one and only Spanky.
Here I am with L.A. Williams, my good friend.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
Career musician. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to fail to mention. So, Ronnie?
Yes.
Okay, so Ronnie here, tell us about.
Yes,
here
Ronnie,
at the table
Mr.
As well.
Ronnie Jones hails from South Bend, Indiana, as well as St. Louis, and then back to South Bend.
Right.
a minister. He has also been with the group that I'm traveling with this weekend, Flint Cavaliers Gospel Group Quartet, and he's been with the group for going on 6-7 years, and he's here. He did a wonderful job last night. We were just talking about the performance last night and the one we got coming up.
Wow, there's so much to talk about. Okay, first, now the reason why you're such a source of inspiration to me is because it kind of touches home. My father has been suffering from kidney issues.
Yes.
And I know you struggle with that. It's amazing. To me, you're a miracle. So tell
yes.
me about that. And,
yes. You know. I was, ever since I was young, man, I was not a person to get sick. Like And if I had a bad cold or something like that, I always would go to school. Like I would go to school, fight through all of that.
Okay.
And so, it was one thing my mother would get on my sister about. It's like, your brother never stays home. He don't care what he's going through. He goes to school. So I was something my father had. He would never get sick. He got those genes. But all of a sudden, I was about 35, and for a span of about a couple months during the winter in Chicago, during the winter from like probably December or so, I fell ill. And I'm thinking at that time, this is cold season, flu season is normal. And so I end up doing these home remedies, man. I didn't go to the doctor because it wasn't that heavy to me. I'm a home remedy guy. I'm like, okay, I'm cutting out all of the fast food. I'm going
right.
to salads and soups at home and water, lots of water.
That's
and
right.
But I'm still working at the same time. So really time, it goes by. And I look up and I realize, I look like 3-4 weeks gone. But I'm moving and going, but I'm still suffering from this cold, I think. That I think now turned into the flu. I think it turned into the flu, but I'm intensifying my home remedies though. Teas, lemon, ginger, I'm doing all that.
More herbal stuff.
And about 2 months later, I end up at a show. I was at a show in Chicago, and I'm on the stage playing, and I asked somebody, I was like, hey, bring me a chair out here. I don't feel good, bring me a chair. Now, I will say this, I learned better now. My mind was, I need this direct deposit to go through from this. I need to see this direct deposit Tuesday. So let me do this. Let me get through this show, and I'll go to the hospital right after this.
But that's a musician
but that's
mentality.
Musician.
That's how we are.
Yeah.
From gate to gate.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know, let me get this done, and I'll go to the hospital tomorrow.
Yeah.
So I go through the gig, and I'm not noticing, but everybody's coming over like, dude, you okay? I'm like, yeah. What's wrong? He said, well, you're sitting down, first of all, but you kind of slumped over playing this music. I'm like, oh, I'm fine. I'll be fine. Get through the show, and now I'm having breathing problems. So immediately, with my guitar on my back, I go to the emergency room. Go in the emergency room
with
my guitar. Go into the emergency room, and they check me out. They said, let me check the vitals. Vitals look okay, but they go for blood tests. They tell me, they come back and say, blood test's going to take a minute. Let's get a urine sample. Take the urine sample. Comes back 45 minutes later. The doctor busts through the curtains, like in a rush. And I'm laying on the bed. He busts through the curtains. He's like, hey, how long you had this problem? I sit up on the bed. Today I was on the stage and I felt a little tired, so I sat down and I had a little problem breathing. Maybe today. He said, no. What type of medication do you take? I don't take no medication. It just felt bad today. Well, actually, about the last couple months, I had a little cold thing going on. He said, sir, your pH is all over the place. Your pH balance is not even balanced. It's, your phosphorus is high and everything else. And then I say, wait a minute. What are you talking about? Because what you're talking about is not what I'm talking about. And he's like, well, have you been, he didn't start going through these symptoms. He said, are you getting cramps? I said, yeah, late in the middle of the night. I get these bad cramps. They wake me up. He says, you have a taste in your mouth? I said, yeah, how you? I got a smile on my face saying, yeah, how you know?
He's a doctor going through
I was like,
protocol.
Exactly. I said, man, peppermint, brushed my teeth 20 times, and I still got this metallic taste. He says, sir, your kidneys aren't working. Those are signs of your kidney. How long have you had the cramps? Oh, I've had the cramps for a couple months, but I thought it was from being, you know, sitting around or standing up on stage. So the next day, they send me upstairs. They do 3 days full of testing. They want to test. They tested everything from hepatitis B, C to HIV. Everything in between, high blood pressure, sugar, diabetes.
Were you home or were you outside on the road?
No, I was in Chicago,
okay.
Which was the greatest thing ever. And after that, they took tests, man. It came back 3 days later. Everything passed. Negative. Didn't have none of the tests. None of the tests came back positive. Now the look on your face, the doctor's coming back scratching their head. They're saying, man, sometimes we know, sometimes we don't. And this is one of the occasions where we don't know what triggered. You don't have high blood pressure. You don't have high glucose levels. So those are the main triggers. And you don't have any of the autoimmune things.
That's the diabetes?
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't have any of the autoimmune things that would have turned your blood cells against yourself. So they're like, we don't know. But one thing we do know, you have to get that fluid off of you. You're having a hard time breathing because it's fluid on you. And he did this with his hands, man. He put his hands as if he was cupping my heart. And he says, that fluid is going to crush your heart if we don't get it off of you.
So
and
like
he put his hands.
Heart failure.
Yes. Well, yeah, well
exactly.
I would have gone to that, yes.
Yeah, what my father experienced that.
Yes. So the young lady came back and she says, listen. Well, right before she told me my HIV results, I have to say this because this scared the living daylights out of me. That was the last test to come back. So she came to me. She came to me a day before, literally 24 hours before. They visit early in the morning before she gave me the results. She came back. She says, listen, Mr. Williams, it's a great debate. You're probably one of, so far amongst this team that doctors, we're having a problem with you. I was like, what do you mean? He said, well, half of the doctors are split on trying to medicate your kidney. The other doctors are saying, look, we've tested this guy for everything. He doesn't have it. And one test hasn't came back yet. So obviously, he's going to test positive. So let's go ahead on and move on to another patient. Because we know what we need to do for that. And so he comes and she's like, so I said, so what are you saying? And she's like, well, your test results haven't come back yet, but it's the final test that hasn't come back. Everything else is negative, so we're looking at, you know, just moving on to another patient because we know what to do for that. So I said, well, can you just wait for the results to come back and just start, you know, can you treat me? And she was like, well, that's a debate. The doctors who wanted to treat you, they failed in their debate with us. So we want them just going on. And so I was like, wow. I says, okay. I just took it. I was like, okay, all right, well, I'll just wait till tomorrow to hear from you. She comes back the next day. Now, that's 24 hours of dealing with that in my mind. That's 24 hours.
So unsettling.
That's 24 hours, man. I never had no thoughts run through my mind. I doubt it.
What were you talking to somebody? Did you have somebody coaching
you?
Well,
that's the thing. When I first went into the hospital, my family are very, I don't know what word to use. Maybe you guys figure out. But they're very quick. They're quick to come to the hospital because they want to be right on the situation. But they're not. They don't rationalize the situation first. They don't rationalize. If you're in the hospital, it's like
it's doomsday.
It's doomsday. If you're not in and out in 24 hours, it's like, uh-oh, get the family together. And so I held off from talking to my family. I called my sister. I didn't even tell my mother.
That was probably smart.
Yes. I talked to my sister and I told her to meet, because she understands the family. So I said, listen, don't you say a word. This is what's going on. I called my stepfather, who raised me since I was 13. I called him. I called my father. I said, listen, Dad, I'm in the hospital, but I don't know why. And until I know why, I don't want the family to know. Because when they come in, I want to say, wait, stop. Right. This is what's going on. I'll be out in 24 hours. So that was Sunday night. I went in. It's Wednesday. So 24 hours I deal with this. Lady comes back in. She says, listen. She goes through the whole thing again. I don't rush her to give me the answer. But finally she comes off and says, well, the results are back. And it's negative. So we don't know why. And I look at her and I says, you understand that for 24 hours.
Yeah, you had me in.
Come here. Let me whisper something in your ear. So she says, well, the kidney doctor is going to come now.
Okay.
And talk to you and tell you the process. The nephrologist. He comes in. He's like, look, they're going to give you access for dialysis. We're going to start you with dialysis right away.
Yeah.
Right away. And that was it. And that was it. He says, we're going to give you treatments here in the hospital. We're going to give you two treatments here, and then we're going to just pull the fluid, and then we'll set you for a regular schedule in the clinic. And so I did that, and at the first, I had a beautiful, great, she works great with people first times on.
Yeah. Oh, sure, please. Thank you.
And she gave me great advice. I could not have paid for that advice and got better advice.
Okay.
And she coached me through the entire process of what it was going to be like to be in dialysis, what it's going to feel like, what to expect. Every 10 minutes, she sat there through the whole thing and sat there and every 10 minutes. Are you okay? Prepping me. Are you feeling this? If you're not this, you're going to feel this in about 30 minutes. Just chill out. Don't worry. Don't get scared. And it was it was just the feeling of your blood leaving and coming back in. You know, you can get little dizziness
it's
and all of that.
It's a big deal.
It is, man. Yeah. Those little things in your body, those kidneys are dynamic.
I don't take it lightly because I watched my pop go through it.
Yes, man.
And let me say, you are so instrumental. He was scared. Sorry, Dad,
yes. Absolutely.
End of the day, it's fear. He didn't want to do dialysis. He's like, no, I'm fine. So he tried everything else, and he even tried the homeopathic.
The homeopathic, yes. Yeah. Been there.
I did some research. All right, Dad, you need to eat this. You can't eat that. So the fact that you had somebody help you through that.
Yes.
Now, that seems like, for him, it was a really slow transition from realizing what he had to finally arriving at dialysis. It was months, many months.
Yes.
You.
No prep.
You went from the hospital three, 4 days later to dialysis?
Yes. And that was something I encouraged people about that I really hoped. I don't know if it would have been different, but I really, really think back. If I would have done it over, I would have had those regular checkups like I do now at the doctor, because they would have been taking all of those. They would have seen that in the chart. I encourage people. If you got an opportunity when they're telling you, hey, well, you know, you got 30% working, you got 40%, you know, and it's going down, those are the best opportunities to have to try to turn things around. But when you're going to the 20-15% and things of that nature, that's when you got to prep yourself. And so not having a prepping opportunity is when I say, oh, man, my job now is when I... Because I questioned, I said, man, and this is the honest truth, I was like, Heavenly Father, listen, I got a list of people that you could give this to who probably deserve this. And I'll go down the list. And then,
if you need help.
If you need help. But then I thought, I said, you know what? I don't know why, because the doctors don't know why. And now I don't know why. So since I don't know why, maybe this is for another purpose. And I promise you, Nomad, from you being able to talk with you and many other musicians through the country that just contacted me, I seen a purpose. I saw a greater purpose that was bigger than me. That I accepted when our doctors came and said, "You got to get on dialysis."
And that's what gave you the peace.
And when I tell you peace, that's what I pray for, peace.
Because the first thing we all do, why me?
Oh yes, and I did it.
What the hell? Why is this happening to me? Really? Now?
Yep, I did it.
Right?
Yes. Yep. You're right.
And the funny thing that I said to God, why him?
Right.
I was there that night as he played. Yeah. And I looked at him and I was one of the guys that said, "What's wrong with you?" He had his hoodie on.
Sure did.
I said, I sure did have my hoodie on.
Yep.
Yeah, he had his hoodie on. He was sweating. I was like, "It's not hot on you. What's wrong?" And so I started asking. I was like, "Man, you okay?" Next day.
Nomad here with the Career Musician Podcast. Thank you for listening. I wanted to tell you about #AskNomad to ask me any music-related questions, and I will respond usually within 24 to 48 hours. Again, that's #AskNomad. Ask me anything you'd like about the music biz, about your instrument, about practicing, about music theory, anything at all that has to do with music, and I will answer your questions, share, repost, and put it out there for all of the Career Musician Podcast family to see and hear. Thank you so much for listening. This is Nomad, and remember to use #AskNomad.
Listen to the Career Musician Podcast on your preferred streaming service.
When this all happens, and then the thought process, the emotional impact that it has on you, again, looking at you is such an inspiration because myself, it would have been really hard. And so what kept you from saying, you know, man, just screw everything, that's it, I'm done. Like, I don't even, how did you fathom going on with music? Because let's talk about being a musician.
Good,
now.
Yes.
We
good
travel,
question,
right?
Yes.
You know, we're all modern day nomads.
Yes.
This is what we do.
Yes, we do.
It's how we earn a living. And this is how we share our gift.
Absolutely.
So, how did, because I think I asked you that when I first met you in the song. Or when I spoke, I was like, Alec, how do you do gigs? Yeah. How do you do dialysis and gigs? That makes no sense.
And you saw that in person at the summit coming from dialysis and going on the stage,
So,
doctors came in, and they would all come in, and every doctor that came in, as if I had to tell my story over again. Because they, and I think I did it for the confirmation of the future mindset I would have to have. And so every doctor came in, and it was a new doctor, and I go, oh my goodness, they finna ask me the same question, and I'm gonna have to tell it all over again. So, Ms. Williams, what do you do? And then my question would always end up saying, well, I was a musician. And I was like, oh, what stopped it? I said, well, this. I don't know how I'm gonna do this, and be a musician, because a lot of musicians I knew who were doing this, they were doing, they were traveling with a dialysis machine, and they would do their treatments in hotels, and I knew that that was a setback for a lot of musicians. One, namely, mentor of mine, Spanky Alford.
I knew what we were gonna get.
Spanky, and that was one of the things that I was like, man. Out of all the things, and I was the last 4 years Spanky lived, I was very close to him, and I said, you know, and I would mess with our friend Sharky, and I'd be like, man, you got the licks, and I got the kidney failure. You got the feel, like, so. Well, I would laugh about it, but my thoughts about it was that, because I knew the troubles he had. You know, it's like now they're gonna, you know, artists will consider me a liability.
Right.
You know, they're gonna consider me a liability.
That's right.
And I'm like, oh my goodness. And so I'll tell the doctors, I used to be a musician. They'll be like, well, why? What happened? They say, and they encouraged me. It was the doctors.
Man, that's awesome.
It was the doctors, man. I couldn't believe it.
That's awesome.
They said, the doctor said, well, you can still be a musician. Why do you have to stop? You're too young. You're not going to be on, no. You're too young to be on this. Don't let this stop you. You can still, there's still life. There's still life. You can live. And so they said, no, we can set you up. You know, once you get acclimated to this, We can set
we can
you
show
up
you how to do
this yeah. without having to do it in the hotels. We have clinics all over the place, all over the world. And so I was like, what? Are you serious? Anywhere. It's anywhere in the United States. We have clinics. We have networks. Don't worry. And so, but I decided I was going to take 6 months. I took 6 months, no plan. But those 6 months I took for myself to learn. And so the clinic that I ended up going to was Fresenius Dialysis Center. And they have a network where they have a person out of their home office, which is in a corporate office out of Minnesota, who talks with you weekly. And they kind of prep you what to expect and all the things to go through. And I talked to the lady, and this is what she gave me an awakening on, of what gave me encouragement. She said, listen, don't you miss one treatment. Don't you miss one treatment. She says, a lot of people, what the treatment does is it relieves you of symptoms. She said, listen, your kidneys are still not functioning. It feels like you're fine, but you're not fine.
Oh.
You're only on there for 4 hours. And if you take 4 hours every other day, that's 12 hours a day. 12 hours a week.
A week.
Out of 24 hours a day times 7. So now,
it's a small inconvenience.
It's a very small treatment window you have. The other times, your kidneys are not functioning. So she says, don't you miss one treatment and protect the access that they give you to do your treatment through. Those are the two biggest advice she could have ever gave me, because that's been my lifeline. And and that's why I didn't go out for 6 months until I could set up the treatments, and I knew how to maneuver it. And every artist, I'm really thankful for a lot of the gospel artists that I work with, because they were very considerate in that. They were very considerate. They wouldn't move until I was able to do my treatment, which would be really that Friday. I'll do my treatment early morning, get a flight out. And then I'll meet up with them. And sometimes if I couldn't get a treatment on Friday because we had a show, I'll change my treatment to Saturday.
So during the day?
Yep, during the day I was able to do sound check and everything, and then go do my treatment and come back.
Back and do the show.
And come back and do the show.
That kind of diligence, the perseverance that it takes to do that?
And I promise you, when everybody say that, I say it was no strength of my own, because I don't think I could have done it. I promise you.
Hardcore, man.
My prayer when I was in the hospital, my prayer was, if I got to go through this, I got to go through this. I'm not asking you to move the mountain, but you're going to have to definitely give me strength to climb it, because I cannot do it. Because I can't do it. Because I know I don't have the strength. And I promise you.
No, you know what you did? You got a shovel and you built a tunnel through that sucker.
Yeah, man, I promise you.
That's hard work.
It was, man. When I look back, all I could think, I would be like, Father, thank you. Because I don't know, I couldn't have done that. I couldn't have done it. And these guys always running them, they looked at me and was like, dude. I was like, dude, all I need to do is once I'm done, just let me go to sleep.
Right.
And
my dad said that.
Rejuvenate my strength. And once you do that, I think I told you, like, let him get it, like, it's real, let him get his strength back. And once he does, he'll be popping up and he'll be ready to roll.
That's what you said, yeah.
He'll be ready to roll. Just let him, and I said, tell the family. He's serious. When he says he's tired,
leave him alone.
Leave him alone. I was like, leave him, let him get his rest. Let him eat and get his rest, and he'll be right back up, ready to roll. That's what I did, man. That's what I did, and that's how I did it.
Fast forward.
Yes.
Now you're a recipient.
Recipient of a kidney. I originally had a 6 to 8 year wait. I had a universal blood type. Was old blood type, and as universal as that may sound, it's the longest wait because it's the rarest.
When you said universal, I thought that was a good thing.
Right, well, that's what I thought. They was like, well, you have a universal blood type, and I was like, oh, perfect. Yeah, but actually, it's the rarest. So it's a sick. Like all other blood types, had a 3 to 4 year wait, a 4 to 5 year wait. I had a 6 to 8 year wait. So that was March of 2012, and I was on Facebook, and a gentleman in June of 4 years later, in 2016, a gentleman is on Facebook, June 2016, saying, man, how he's, at the 12 tries, he has a perfect match for a kidney. And now he is going in. And man, I plastered his video everywhere. I'm like, man, I thank heaven that somebody, you know, is getting a kidney. And I don't know this guy, but he's just encouraged me. Little do I know, a month and a half later, I'm getting a call. And usually everybody says, well, the first call is just kind of trial run and let you know you're getting close on the list. You're getting close. You're moving up. But they kind of prep you. It's their protocol to prep the person who could be second on the list. Like, prep them who matched up for this kidney. Just in case that the first person can't get it. So they called me. I had a student that day. So they called me about 9 o'clock. Says, Mr. Williams, this is just a protocol, you know, call. Pack a bag. If this person doesn't receive it, you may get a call. But this, normally they take it. But just to prep you, pack a bag. And so I hang up the phone like, yeah, let me go tell the student I'm on my way. And, you know, I'm not going to let this stop me from this class.
Right.
I'm not going to let my student off that easy.
Right.
So I call my sister. I say, listen, they just called me, but I'm not going to get this kid. It's, you know, it's this guy going to, whoever it was, they're going to match up. And so she's like, you sure? They ain't call you for no reason. I said, no, they call me because protocol. And so I'm like, I'm going to this student, and I'm going by my business. They supposed to call me back in 45. They didn't call me back in 45 minutes. So, like, I'm going out the door. Phone rings. And when the phone rings, it's Madison, Wisconsin. Hospital, University of Wisconsin Hospital in Madison. And I'm stunned at the phone ringing. I'm like, no, no, no. No, 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 no.
I gotta go teach.
And, man, I'm shaking, and she clearly told me the first time, we're not calling you back if this kidney is not for you. She's calling me back. Man, by the way, in the interim, I called my pastor, and I prayed for the person to get the kidney. I said, Pastor, I want to pray that the person, I said, and this was the reason why, whoever is before me, they may not be as strong as me. They may not be as, I've got a lot of resources around me. They may not have these resources.
But I got, conditioned yourself.
And I've conditioned, because at my 4-year point was March 25th. My 4-year point, I said, you know what? I can go another 4 years. I can do this. This was strong. I can do this. At 4 years, I said, you know what? Wow. I can do this, man. I got a lot of support systems. I can do this.
Amazing.
And from March to August, I got the call. And we prayed for the other person to get the kidney. But I got the call back, and I answered the phone, busting in tears. I'm in tears. I'm about to cry now, man.
Man.
I'm in tears, dude.
No, this is real,
And
man.
She's like, how long can it take you to get here? And they're 2 hours away. And I said, I'm coming now. I called my sister.
With a guitar.
I called my sister, and I said, this is it, Tasha. This is it. And we hit the road, man. She canceled her job. She's like, I'm not coming in. I got to drive my brother to get a kidney.
4 years.
Four years. 4.5 years, I got the kidney.
Don't get the kidney.
And I had an 8-year wait. And so, to anybody listening, hey, it happens just like that.
Okay, I mentioned L.A. Williams, Isaiah Sharkey, and Spanky. Well, Spanky Alford, he is probably the godfather of all things gospel, jazz, R&B, guitar. I mean, this dude has really inspired so many of us guitarists, and we all run the gamut of genres and styles that we play, but Spanky really just left a mark on all of us. May he rest in peace. So, as I'm talking to L.A. Williams, if you hear me bring up Spanky, that's who we're talking about. And Isaiah Sharkey is a young cat who came up in the ranks the past a couple handfuls of years, and he's just killing it. And Sharkey and L.A. are very tight, and they were both close to Spanky. So that's why I mentioned that, give you a little bit of history.
Subscribe to The Career Musician on Apple Podcasts.
A gentleman who plays one of the legendary groups in quartet, he's the drummer, name's Keith Hampton. He has a similar testimony, and he's out of St. Louis. They know him, and he called me. I was about 3 years in with the dialysis, and he called me and said, "Hey man, I need to talk to you." And he's in the hospital. And he tells me he has kidney failure. Now, at that point, I'm devastated. I'm saying, "No, Keith, oh man, oh, I'm crying. We're very close." And I'm like, "No, Keith."
Younger than you.
And this is what he says. "Hey, LA, no. No, it's cool, man. Hey, no, LA."
He didn't say anything for you.
I'm like, "It's cool, man." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He says, "I saw you. I've seen you grow through it. I saw you. I don't know nobody who did what you did." He said, "I seen you, and now that's mine." But that at that moment, 3 years later, when I got his call, he was the first one to ever call me. It was 3 years later that I understood my prayer. I was like, "I don't know why I'm going through this, but I got to be going through this for some reason." And when I got his call, everything just made sense to me.
That's grit.
Yeah.
We're not talking about getting through 100 push-ups. We're talking about life or death. Literally.
Yes. No, literally. No.
Every day.
Literally.
I know that I just traveled.
Literally, man.
That's why this podcast is so important. So
yeah, dude. I appreciate it, dude.
But okay, but before we go.
Yes.
Because I know we're running out of time. You guys got to get going. Spanky.
Oh.
And your history there. I feel in the guitar community especially. I want this on every guitar magazine.
I want
it streaming on Netflix and everywhere. Like, I want to do some kind of a documentary that really speaks to what this man and the legacy
man.
And then how you and Sharky are carrying the torch.
And that documentary would be great, but the Spanky Alford aspect came in for me. 25 years old, my brother-in-law was begging me. I was in the corporate world. I didn't play guitar for 6 years.
Yeah.
From 20 to 25, I didn't play. I was trying to get my 401k plan going from corporate world. And so he begged me to play for him for an outdoor fest. And I turned around for so many years, and I finally said, okay. And I met this group here that I'm traveling with at 25 years old. And I played for him, and one of the guys asked me to sit in with them. And so the guy that was just interjected, Craig Johnson from Flint, Michigan. Craig was playing at the time. He was a guitar player at that time. And so I was learning from him. But we were traveling one day, him and a big bass player, to go in Carolina somewhere. And he asked me, had I heard of Spanky? At that time, I was a young bloomer. So I wasn't really deep into who played what. I just listened to records. I don't know who was playing what. So I was like, no. But he put on a cassette tape. And I hear this guitar player. And I'm like, whoa.
Freaks you out.
Whoa. Whoa.
That's
so
what freaks you out.
Years later, this is years later, I'm about in my 30s.
Yeah.
He's playing, which he loves Spanky. No matter what, you're out with Babyface and you make time for me. So I'm like, I love these type of people. And so Spanky would make himself available. He was out of Huntsville. There was a convention of quartet singers, artists in Birmingham, Alabama. So Spanky would come down from Huntsville and hang. If he wanted to
destroy all the guitar players.
Listen, if he wanted to, he would get up and play for everybody on the stage. He would be like, "Oh, you need me to play? All right, let me get my guitar."
Yeah.
And he would go and play with everybody. So one day I seen him walking down the hall, and I'm looking, and my brother-in-law says, "There go the guy right there." And I was like, "Who?" And he's like, "Spanky." I'm like, "Not that guy." And my brother-in-law says, "Watch this. Mr. Spanky," and he puts his hand out, and Spanky's like, "Hey, what's up, man?" And I'm frozen. Now I'm like, "Oh, that is Spanky."
And that's what my idol. Oh, no.
So
now what am I going to do?
What I do then, I got to drop a name because now I'm so frozen. I said, "Hey, how do I introduce myself to him?" And I says, "Mr. Alford, we have a great mutual friend." And he says, "Who was that?" And I says, "Mr. Craig Johnson." And which is him. And I said, "Craig Johnson." And he says, "Oh, that's my boy." And he gets to singing one of his songs that he put out at the time called "Hold Out, Be Strong," quartet song. He's like, he starts singing a song, "Hold Out, Be Strong." And they were burning it up on the radio in Huntsville.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So he was like, "Tell Craig they burning the song up, man. They burning it up." And he had a card. No, he said, "You got a card?" And I said, "Yeah." And on the back of a card, he wrote his name and number. He says, "This is my number. Call me anytime you want." from there was it. For 4 years, man. And I would call his house so much, his wife Shirley would answer the phone and says, "Hold on, Derek." Right. At that time, I didn't have L.A. Oh. At that time, I didn't have L.A.
She wanted a superstar.
So she'd pick up the phone and say, "Hold on, Derek. He's doing something. He don't want you to hang up. He's told me to tell you to hold on."
Right.
And, man, but what I love, I tell people all the time this. Spanky spent more time talking to me about life
than it wasn't about riffs.
It wasn't about...
So he became your mentor.
Oh, man. Unbelievable, the conversations about life that he would have with me about just being a man and prepping yourself in a business, the business aspect of the industry.
That's why we're here.
Yes.
That's why this exists, the Career Musician Podcast, to hear your story.
Yes, man.
Imbued from people like...
Yes, absolutely. And I tell people all the time, you'll get that from Tyrone Jackson.
Yeah.
You'll get that from Sharky. Anybody who spent time, Kevin Wilson.
Right.
They will tell you they spent more time talking to him about just life in general, experiences, than, "Hey man, pick up the guitar. So what was those licks that you did?" And you know, he would do it. He would do it. One time I was in Birmingham when he got ill, very ill, in January. They had a convention, and so he wasn't able to come down. Shirley talked to him and said, "You know what? I don't think he gonna make this one." So when she said that, I got out of my car in Birmingham and I drove up to Huntsville. I'm like, no. Well, she had that voice, that tone in her voice. And I went and seen him. He's at a music store because he taught at this music store called Shepherd's, Tom Shepherd's, T. Shepherd's. And he's teaching and he goes in the back. I go in the back and he's sitting down. And I had this voicemail at the time. I had some guitar on it. And he's like, "Hey man, what's that thing you got on your voicemail?"
Yeah.
I'm like, "Oh, no, don't try it. You can play that." "Yeah, no, sure. Where you coming from?" Which I loved about him. He was eager to... He want to know where you coming from. What you doing then? Where you coming from with that? What's the angle you doing in there? So I show him, and when I show him, he says, "Oh, so you did this." He's like, "Now, you know you can do this, this, and 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 this." Oh, my goodness.
I love it.
And so I said, he had my guitar. I said, "Spanky, man, would your guy do a setup with my guitar?" He says, "Yeah." He comes in, and that time he's very weak. He's very weak at that time. And he tries to get up, and I say, "Oh, no, I'll go get it." He says, "No, I got it. I'm going to go up there with you." And he gets up, and I'm like, whoa.
Again.
And he gets up, and he walks up front. And I see him in his condition, but I'm saying, but he's here teaching students. He's still playing, till the end.
Because he knows that cycle of life.
That's
has
it.
To be shared. That's what has to
tell
go
the end, man. And he goes up, he tells Shepherd, "Hey, set my man strings up, put him in." And then at the end, I go to pull out my money. Spanky says, "What are you doing?" Same thing you just did. "What are you doing?" No. "Shepherd, put it on my bill." No. "I want you right. I want you right when you go back to the convention." And that was the last time I seen him. And in March, he passed.
I'm speechless, which is rare. as performers, none of us are usually speechless. But man, I just can't thank you enough for all this knowledge and wisdom.
No, thank you, man.
And it is life. It's life wisdom. And it goes so far beyond the playing.
Yes, it does. If anybody's struggling with kidney failure first time, or uncle, mother, anybody, there is life after kidney failure.
That's right.
There is life after kidney failure.
You're living proof.
That's it.
Last thing I wanted to say is, where can people hear you, get your music, find everything that you do?
Well, actually, the stuff that I'm doing now, I'm on Facebook under L.A. Williams, Instagram, okay. L.A. the Guitarist. But I don't have any music out on myself, but I am producing. I do have two singles I just produced on this artist, quartet artist, the Flint Cavaliers out of Flint, Michigan. They have a single out called Holding On. I wrote the song, arranged it, and recorded it. And a single called One Man that I rearranged and arranged all the music and produced the project.
Nice.
So the entire project is forthcoming, but it's an artist out of Chicago called Eve, EV the number 3. Three young ladies, phenomenal. I was in the studio and I was working on their project, on their album.
Yeah.
And the producer was like, hey man, you got anything you got in your brain, anything you want to put on, see what we can work with? And I was like, you know what, I got this tune I'm working on. I don't have any words, but I got a tune I'm working on. I played a whole song on acoustic. It was acoustic feel. And next thing you know, that was in February 2016. 2 years later, in the interim of things, a guy that we know, co-signed from a group, a production group called Interns out of
Interns.
LA.
I know Co-Sign.
Co-Sign is friends with my producer.
Wow.
They were working out of the same studio before they moved to LA. He's from Chicago, so they worked out of the same studio. And we sent it to him. We had just got the song mixed. The words were put on it. People wrote to it. Kaya Holmes, Gabrielle Morgan, Dante Hall wrote to this. And Corey Barksdale. And so we were finishing up for their project, for the album. But Cosign hears it, and while he's listening to it, somebody's in his studio. He's listening to it, checking out the mix. He's sending us word back like, yeah, it's cool, everything's good. The guy hears it and was like, hey, who was that? He's like, oh, it's this group from Chicago, my people. It's like, gospel or secular. He said, oh, it's gospel. He says, you know, Snoop working on a gospel album. Like, huh? Hey, man, he need to hear this. So the process starts, and next thing you know, Snoop hears it. First day he hears it, he's like, it's going on the album. So the production was split between myself, the gentleman, Luther, and Cosign. And so we produced it.
And you wrote it.
I arranged the music, everything, and that was it, dude. I wrote the music, and then it got placed on Snoop's album, man. And track 23, called Unbelievable, featuring Eve.
Damn. Yep,
my work,
just
man.
Just like that.
Yeah.
And like a real professional career musician, you handled your business.
Yes, yes.
Oh, you got your publishing.
Yes, that was the first thing. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because
you gotta teach the young generation
when we first began to talk about it, the first thing out of the other guy's mouth, Lou, which I celebrate Lou, because I wasn't too keen on working on productions. And so next thing you know, I said, man, I ain't too keen on working on productions. The business isn't right. And he says, I promise you, this will be right. This, when you work with me, this will be right. And so I laid on the table everything I would need, make sure all the paperwork's right. He laid on the table everything he can do. And we made a partnership. And we've been working on that production team ever since. The whole production is called Hotel Saints. And they got a great production. Stuff is coming out this year and next year.
We'll have to check that out.
But one thing he said is, hey, let's get this on paper now. We do an email thing, and then we'll get the lawyers on it right away. And he kept to his word. We split the production credits, my writing credits, I got all my ASCAP, money ASCAP, and we're writing and publishing.
A person that's not willing to do business before work,
yes,
is not worth doing business with at all.
Come on.
Yes. Right? And a lot of cats, oh man, this guy comes in and wants to talk business. Why wouldn't I? Let's handle the business. Then we can forget about that and have fun.
Nothing but work. That's it. Nothing but work after that. Yeah, we can have fun.
That's beautiful, man.
Yep. Track 23, Unbelievable, featuring Eve on Snoop Dogg Presents Bible Love.
Bam.
That's it.
L.A. Williams,
yes,
ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Nomad.
Yeah, gentlemen, ladies.
I appreciate you, man.
I'm sorry, Ronnie.
Minister Ronnie Jones and Minister Craig Jones.
A.K.A.
Craig
Red Bull.
A.K.A. Grasshopper Red Bull. He's the energy of the bunch.
All right, thank you for listening to my rant. That wraps another episode of the Career Musician Podcast by yours truly, Nomad. Thank you, L.A. Williams, for making the time and sharing with us and being so vulnerable about your personal life's journey. We are forever grateful and indebted to you. Please like, subscribe, share, follow, download, blah, 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 blah. Everything the Career Musician. Don't forget, gospel, jazz, R&B, funk, soul, rock, Latin, this, that, everything else, and in between. The Career Musician signing off. Until next time.
Thank you for tuning in to The Career Musician. Please click the subscribe button and share The Career Musician Podcast on your social media feeds.
I'm just a nomad, nowhere man, writing the songs in this one-man band. I know, man.
Nomad here, host and creator of the Career Musician Podcast, wanting to tell you all about PantheonPodcast.com Network. I am a part of this collective that is solely music-based podcasts. And guess what? It is the only one of its kind on the globe so far. It is a collective of an independent network of podcasts all based on music, which dig into the culture, technology, history, and everything else you can imagine that has to do with music. Thank you so much for listening, and be sure to check us out at PantheonPodcasts.com. Drummers! So you're watching an amazing drummer on YouTube, and they're playing something so crazy, you just can't figure it out. If only you can tap this drummer on the shoulder and say, hey, can you slow it down and break it down for me, man? PossibleChops.com does exactly that. They've asked some of the top-of-the-line drummers to play in short, digestible phrases some of their craziest chops. Then they slow it down and transcribe it so you can actually learn what the heck they're doing. They're making chops possible. Now, PossibleChops.com is an online drum lesson website that makes it easy to add to your drumming vocabulary from some of the baddest professional drummers. And when I say baddest, I mean the dopest, illest, most ridiculousest drummers you ever heard. Imagine getting a breakdown from drummers who played with the likes of Usher, Earth, Wind & Fire, Chick Corea, Babyface, Sheryl Crow, Tony Braxton, and the list goes on. The PossibleChops.com community is designed to allow drummers to share ideas and help you on your path to becoming a pro and getting gigs. That's right, folks, actually getting real gigs. If you're serious about drumming, do yourself a favor and visit PossibleChops.com. Join today and basic membership is free. However, if you decide to upgrade to a pro membership, use the promo code NOMAD to get your first free month. That's right, folks. Use coupon code NOMAD and you get the whole first month absolutely free. Adding new chops are now made possible for drummers on PossibleChops.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.